Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Elbridge Colby, his new book is The Strategy of Denial, American Defense in an Age of Great Power Conflict. This is the future, based upon prologue, the past, about a contest between the great power, the United States of America, and the great power, the People's Republic of China. We will also mention the great power of the Russian Federation. We will look to the EU and NATO, but right now we're dealing with a scenario that is not here, and we do not welcome it, but it's very likely possibility of all the choices in an armed conflict, which is the People's Republic of China launching an invasion against Taiwan, a fait accompli invasion, an invasion such as was imagined by Mao, I'm told, before the Korean War. Many of the soldiers that wound up counterattacking the American advance to the Yalu were scheduled to invade Taiwan, is the story. We come now to the 21st century, and we start with denial defense, which is the best choice for the U.S. and its coalition against China. We need definitions. Bridge, what is denial defense? How does it work?
A denial defense is basically the ability to deny China its ability to subordinate one of the members of the anti-hegemonic coalition, and in this case, Taiwan. So it's an ability to keep Taiwan going on side on our side, and that's against the punishment approach, which should be easier, but also against that direct invasion. So the key to the fait accompli is successfully effecting a fait accompli is for the aggressor to seize and to hold the key territory, really, of a targeted country. So, you know, if China decides to just seize and hold the two tiny offshore islands that Taiwan holds right across off the Chinese mainland, that's not going to get Taiwan to give up. Also, if China lands on Taiwan but gets ejected before it can, you know, establish its hold, that's not going to work. Rather, China's got to seize Taiwan's, you know, Taipei, Kaohsiung, the military bases, these kind of key areas, and hold them. So if we, the Americans, along with the Taiwanese and hopefully the Japanese, maybe the Australians and others, if we can prevent China from doing this, then, you know, then we will succeed. And I emphasize that there are many, many ways to do that. You know, you can think very high technology missiles and drones, and obviously that will be a critical part of it. But it also could be more traditional methods. You know, the key at the end of the day is degrading and ideally destroying that invasion force before it can you know, deploy and sustain enough force to subordinate people on Taiwan.
I follow denial. What of the choice of domination? Is it available for the U.S. to dominate the contest the way it could in the 20th century?
Well, I mean, no, I don't think so. And I, you know, the basic reason is the balance of power. I mean, ultimately, in the modern world, probably since the invention of gunpowder, more or less, military power is a derivative of economic strength and, you know, technology and so forth. So, you know, a very, very large economy like China is ultimately going to have a very, very significant and capable military. And, you know, ours might be better on the margin here or there, but net-net, it's not going to be a major difference. Moreover, the contest that we're talking about, the potential fights are right on China's front yard, you know, where they can easily bring the mass of their military power. We, meanwhile, have to project 5,000-10,000 miles, which is difficult. I mean, people think that, you know, military affairs have been fundamentally revolutionized. In some ways, maybe they have. But look, airplanes still use gas. Tanks still use gas. Troops got to eat. So, you know, distance matters, right? And at the end of the day, human beings are killed by kinetic force, generally speaking. So, you know, you got to get a bullet or a projectile to arrive somewhere. And that requires movement. So in a sense, it's more old-fashioned than people sometimes think.
We now have a scenario where Taiwan is in conflict, and it may be the Chinese military, it may be little green men, but the conflict is now to be acted upon by the coalition. You give an example of how the goals for the coalition. You used 1940, Germany, Operation Sea Lion, preparing for the invasion of the British Isles. And the way they did it was using the Air Force, the Luftwaffe, first to destroy the RAF on the ground and then changing direction to terror bomb the cities of Britain. The commander of the RAF had a task. His task was not to defeat Germany. What does that, his task was to stop the preparation for the invasion. What does that teach us about denial defense, Britt?
Well, what it teaches us is that I think there, I found a great quote by Air Marshal Dowding to that exact point. He said, my goal here is not to defeat Germany and end the war. It's just to deny the invasion. It's a really good situation if you can arrange things such that our metric of success is essentially denial of the invasion, right? Because an invasion is really, really hard across water. Now, it can be done. We've been sailing all over the world for the last 70, 75 years and having the ability to invade people. That's what our Marine Corps prepares to do, the best of the best. So it's not impossible, but it is hard. I also point out, I found this statistic somewhere, no Allied aircraft were shot down by German aircraft on D-Day. The degree of air and naval superiority that the Allied forces enjoyed in June 4th, 5th, 5th, 6th was it tremendous, and it was still a contested landing. So I think the basic line here is that this is actually a pretty good situation for us from a strategic point of view and from a military requirement point of view. But given how powerful China is, given its focus on this problem, and given its proximity and resolve, it's going to be really, really hard. But what we actually need to do at the end of the day is a lower standard. And we need to let dominance go. You know, we need to basically say, you know, we didn't have dominance in the Cold War. We always thought we would have lost a conventional war in the European theater against the Soviets. Maybe at the very end of the Cold War, we started to think we could win it. But we never had dominance. We weren't even sure we had denial, maybe until the very end or something close to robust denial. So I think we can do better here in Taiwan. But if we can do that, we can successfully, I think, keep the peace on terms that are favorable to us.
The PLA is on shore. They're on the beach. They're moving towards Taipei. You say that we have two options. The coalition has two options. The first is to deny territory or to deny the ability of the PLA to sustain its invasion force. That is exactly what the Germans understood they had to do in Normandy and failed to do, which is to defeat on the beach. Is that the first goal of the coalition?
That's one option. I think you'd certainly want to go after that. I mean, look, the simple fact is that an invasion force is likely to be particularly vulnerable when it's, you know, stuck in fat ships and fat aircraft that have to in transport aircraft, right? I mean, you know, I get almost sort of reductively, you know, primitive level points in this point. But I mean, you know, if a truck carrying troops is damaged, people can get out, repair the truck and keep going. If you're shot down in an aircraft, you're probably dead. And if you're sunk in a ship, if you're not dead, you're in a lifeboat and all your equipment's gone. So, you know, and the nature of transport across water and air is such that the systems, the platforms that have to transport people are just larger, bulkier, and they tend to be more vulnerable. So I think we've really got to think about going after the PLA while they're crossing the strait, and in fact, probably while they're preparing for invasion, if we're confident enough or if the war has already started, we need to be hitting them on the mainland as they're leaving and even preparing to leave their ports and air bases.
There is a second fallback. There is a fallback position, which is to deny the invader territory. What does that mean, Bridge?
Right. Well, it's to deny the ability, their ability to hold it. Look, the reality is you may not be able to stop everybody from getting over. I mean, we shouldn't underestimate how powerful and capable the PLA is. They would very possibly be able to land even significant forces or airdrop them as well, right? I mean, if we use the Normandy example again, you know, a lot of aircraft flying in the middle of the night, with no notice, the Germans dropping people, dropping our paratroopers and British and Canadian paratroopers, French paratroopers into Normandy. And the Germans had to take care of that. So, you know, you have to be prepared that your optimal defense may not be sufficient. That's one thing. The other thing is there are situations in which it may make sense not to defend at the kind of the the furthest extension of your perimeter. I mean, the classic example here would be Russia, right? General Winter, right? I mean, the Soviets were almost defeated in the early period of Barbarossa because so many of their forces were forward and were encircled and destroyed or forced into surrender by, you know, highly mobile and aggressive German forces. It was bringing the Germans into the interior of Russia, exhausting them, getting them, you know, extending their supply lines, et cetera, and then counterattacking from a position of strength. I think in the case of Taiwan, it's likely to make more sense to focus on the first form of denial, given it's an island, it's relatively small, it's close to China. In other cases like Vietnam, potentially, maybe Korea in the future, maybe India, it may make more sense to think about a combination or even rely on the second one. And frankly, if the Russians have to think about a Chinese military incursion, they may want to think about this second aspect.
I'm speaking to Elbridge Colby, the author of The Strategy of Denial, American Defense in an Age of Great Power Conflict. We're going to turn now to a limited war after the denial defense. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.